Welcome back. We are back with week two of our UBC Advent podcast. This is John.
And this is Rachel.
And this week we're looking forward to the cantata that the choir and church musicians will present this Sunday. But first, just getting into the season of Advent, tell me about Advent for you growing up. Did you celebrate it in the church where you went, or is it something that was, what was it like for you?
Yeah, I know we definitely used the candles and the wreath, lighting each one each week. I don't remember as much of the emphasis on the themes growing up, but one of my fondest memories during this time was at home, which is where a lot of this tradition started in the first place, with a little Advent calendar. It was ours was a piece of cardboard that had a drawing on a painting, and it had a little window that you would open up each day to reveal part of the picture. And each inside the window had a scripture that we would read together. And if you got all the way through every day to December 24th, there was a little pocket in the back of December 24th it had a piece of chocolate. So it was worth it each year to go through all 24 readings. And then it revealed this entire picture with the manger scene and the angels and the shepherds. And we did that every year until I moved out, really.
Yeah, and Eric and I were talking. His parents used chocolate. My parents did not. But it was still exciting for me. And that's the only context for the word Advent that I had growing up was an Advent calendar. And even though it was just like little pictures or whatever, I would always try to open it just to see in advance and put it back as if my parents couldn't tell that I'd already opened it. But whatever.
Right.
So as we look at symbols of Advent, one of the symbols that we use this time of year, and it's culturally also appropriated, is just the use of greenery. We talked about that some last week and how the evergreen symbol at this time of year, especially in bleak climates, was a welcome sight when everything else was brown and dead. But the use of a wreath and a green wreath during Advent and leading up to Christmas dates back to the 1500s. At least that's what Wikipedia says. And the wreath for centuries, of course, has been a sign of victory. You know, in the Olympics, they would put a wreath on their head that they had won something. There's the evergreen and the greenness of it. And of course, now we have added this concept of candles to represent each Sunday. And I had to look to see what the origin of this was. And from what I found, it was a German minister in the 1830s named Johann Heinrich Wichern, who had a mission, worked with the poor people in his community, but especially worked with the children. And every year he found that they were impatient waiting for Christmas. And every day when they would meet, is it time yet? How soon is it? So he came up with this idea of having a display with a candle for each day of December leading up to then. And he had big candles for Sundays so that they had something to anticipate. And also he could show them, look at the candles, it's not time yet. So that tradition has persisted, but we've only kept the large Sunday candles since then, which is good because I think it'd be way too many candles
That's
to have
a lot
lit
of
every
candles.
Week. Yeah. The colors of the candles, and you and I were talking about this before we started recording, is odd. I have always seen it. Again, I didn't grow up with it, but I've seen purple, pink in that order. So first week is purple, second week is purple, third week is purple, fourth week is pink. And then, of course, the Christ candle in the middle that is the representation of Jesus and the light returning. And I had always heard that you do the pink on the Sunday before, just kind of like the sky begins to light up before the dawn. And so you've got darkness, a little bit lighter, and then the full light of Christ.
Some churches don't do it that way.
No, some people, and I think traditionally the third week is actually the pink candle. I was doing some research a few years ago, and one, purple is used two different times of the year for the Christian calendar, right? Advent and Lent. And so a lot of the purple you'll see during Advent tries to be more of a blue purple, cool toned, instead of the more red purple that you see in Lent. So there's a little distinction there. But to do purple, pink, purple, a lot of what I've read says that the pink being on the third Sunday, that's the Sunday of joy. And so you want pink, something a little brighter, something that breaks you out of the monotony a bit. And what better week to have than joy for that?
That makes sense. I still like the other way better, but it does make sense at least. And that's something I'm not sure if we mentioned last week, is that each week also traditionally has a theme, and we'll
probably touch on that again
later, but hope is the first week, peace is the second week, joy is the third week, and then love being the fourth week.
Yes. In more recent years, people like to use pink on the love Sunday because they equate pink with red and love and all of that. I've been partial to pink on the third week, but that's just because that's how I grew up. It's a tradition.
Well, honestly, not many of us are going to notice. So even after it's lit, we're not sitting there wondering what the colors mean. I don't think anyway. So, but it's a special part of Advent and the Christmas season, having these candles lit. So we're going to quickly jump back to this concept that I was kind of inspired by, this ruining Christmas idea that we did at Theology on Tap, and some of the common pushbacks that people have to celebrating Christmas. And I've talked with some people and actually known people who don't celebrate Christmas, and they give this one that I'm going to mention now as one of the reasons for that. And it's that we don't know the actual date that Jesus was born. Looking back in all the different sources that I was looking through, it's surprising that we even know anything about Jesus' birth at all, because it's not like there was a king that was being born and there were people sitting by ready to write down the date and the important details. In those days, you had your child, and then 8 days later, you took him to the temple. And even then, it wasn't something that was written down. They weren't keeping track of things that way. He was born in a small town in the back end of Judea, so there was no reason for anyone to pay attention to this birth at all. And even looking at it, we don't know not only December 25th, whether that was the day or not, but we don't even know the year that he was born, which is strange because they tried to calculate it and they ended up moving the entire calendar around just to set it on AD 0. But when you look at the history books, Herod the Great, who was supposedly alive in Matthew's version at least, died in either 4 BCE or 1, 4, 3, 2, or 1 BCE, so before the time that we typically think Jesus was born. So there's other ways of dating it. You know, Luke says that Jesus was about 30 when he began his ministry, but really, there's so very little that we can know that far back because records were not really kept. Some people object to the concept of December 25th in the middle of the winter because the shepherds were out in the fields, but in that part of the world, winters are actually kind of mild, yeah. So it would have been a good time for them to be out there because they wouldn't have had as much at the house or back in the pens to eat.
The point is, do we really need to know the specific date?
And symbols are much less about the historical accuracy, in my opinion, than it is about what it represents. Hmm. We were talking before we started recording, symbols have meaning, and we as people, we like ritual, we like normalcy, we like the traditions that you can reach back to year after year. So December 25th, I think, is as good a date as any. If that's what we're going to decide is the right way to the time to celebrate, then let it be that simple. It doesn't make it any less meaningful if it's actually another day.
Right. So we'll go with December 25th. I think maybe if we tried to change it now, we'd probably get a little bit of pushback.
And we'd have to change the whole calendar again.
That's true. So we're going to leave it on December 25th. All that to say, some people don't agree with that, but
at least in our opinion, it's an event worth celebrating, just like commemorating Jesus' death and resurrection on Easter. We feel like it's important that Jesus was born.
We're going to talk about that in another podcast, that some people just kind of look over that to think about the fact that Jesus died and was raised from the dead to save us from our sins. But it's important that Jesus lived too. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been born at all. So we're going to leave it on December 25th, at least for this year. Maybe next year we can talk about it. It'll be like
we'll shake it up a little bit. The
daylight savings conversation where everybody's always saying we need to change it, but nobody ever does. So we're going to turn to worship. Just a reminder as you're listening that our theme for this Advent is unexpected, talking about the different ways that God has shown up through the story of leading up to the birth of Jesus. We talked about Zechariah. We talked about Mary, both of whom were visited unexpectedly by angels in kind of the middle of
normal everyday life. And suddenly their life just changed completely by what they experienced. Can you think of a time when God surprised you or something unexpected happened that you ended up being able to see God's hand in?
Yes, and it's kind of a silly example, but it's actually the best that comes to mind. We had a dog. Jason and I had a dog, a border collie, and we loved her, but she was a lot to handle. And so for several years, We said, this is our last dog. We are not going to have another dog. We don't need another dog. We don't want another dog. And 2 years ago, a dog showed up on our front porch, and now we have another dog just immediately. And it was difficult. And it was, why do we have this dog? Yes, we love him, but this is a lot of work. He might not move to Baton Rouge well. He might not transition to things well. Daisy doesn't like other dogs. All these reasons. And yet, this morning, looking back at it, while this new dog is curled up next to me on the couch on a rainy morning, well, God puts things in your place sometimes, in your way that you don't expect. And it's the small things, I think, that the God shining through. To put this little beagle in front of us to where it was obvious he was supposed to be with us, and now that our other dog has passed, it's so nice to have this friendly, warm animal at the house every day that wants our company. We want his company. And it's the everyday reminder that we actually don't have the plan already set out, even just in, do we get another dog or not?
Yeah. And that we're not alone, even when we might be by ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think it's easy for us to try to look for the big things, you know, wait for an angel to show up or the night sky to light up. But it really is in the small things that if we're paying attention, we can see where God is around us each moment.
Yes, it has to be for me, because there's plenty of big moments that I can look back and say, oh, yes, I see God now. But it's the everyday, that commonplace moving forward, that keeps me grounded, knowing that, yes, it's unexpected in a small way, but that's going to impact your everyday moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. Well, this Sunday, we're not doing a sermon. This coming Sunday, we're actually going to hear a sermon in song. So the cantata that you've chosen for this year, tell us a little bit about it and help us to get ready to hear it on Sunday.
Yes, I am so excited for this cantata. I did it a few years back when I was in Tampa still at the church there. And the organist came and found me and said, have you thought about Carol of Christmas by John W. Peterson? And I said, I've never heard of it, so no. He presented it to me and I looked it through and I said, oh, this will just work beautifully for our first cantata back from COVID at the time. This cantata was written in 1965 and it does sound a little bit like that. It's got some older harmonies, but it's beautiful. This cantata is comprised of all these familiar carols, the songs that you've been singing possibly since you were a child. And it sticks really well to those, the texts, the scripture readings, and then it works so well with organ and piano. So I think we're really going to, I know the choir is going to enjoy singing it for everybody. So I think you're going to enjoy hearing it as well.
Yeah. And it's one of the oldest cantata style things that I've done, other than looking way, way back into classical. But yeah, I can even hear and it called to mind the Music Man, like the scenes of the Barbershop Quartet
and different things. It's got that kind of vibe to it. And yet it's beautiful and really makes some meaningful kind of pieces Christmas songs together to make a meaningful patchwork.
Yes, it sort of travels through the Christmas story as many Christmas musical presentations will at this time, but it weaves it together in ways that you're not going to hear all of a song necessarily, but it's going to be putting these thematic carols in unexpected places suddenly, and it flows with that music, the story of Christmas being read as we sing.
As musicians, it's interesting to think about the role that music plays in our celebrations this time of year. And that's true when we're sitting in worship on Sunday morning and when we're walking through Walmart and hearing
All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Right.
What is it about music that makes this season so much more special?
Music at Christmas time in particular. These are songs that you've probably sung or heard every single year that you've been around, that you know that you've been listening to music. The songs are familiar. Many of us maybe can sing some of these by heart at this point, more than one verse, which is particularly impressive. It just adds that extra layer. There's good theology in these old songs. The fact that everybody knows them, the tunes, the text, means that we're all actually singing out together.
Hopefully.
There's more chance that we're familiar with them enough to feel comfortable singing out between Joy of the World, Silent Night, Away in a Manger. As I list those, you might hear them already in your head. And it adds that layer of familiarity, especially when things might feel like they're changing rapidly in our world. There's something comforting about hearing this music, singing this music, being surrounded by it to really ground you in a season of possibly a lot of change and upheaval, or even things feeling the same yet, oh good, this one's familiar. This one feels like I've done it before.
Yeah, I love that grounding. And I think about like our own family tradition when we're putting up the Christmas tree at home. I don't even have to ask, like, what are we going to listen to? Peanuts, you know, Charlie Brown Christmas soundtrack. There's a old Take Six album that I love. And it kind of brings us into that spirit, which is strange to me because you think about other times of the year, like you don't hear Easter songs in Walmart.
Right.
And even, you know,
there's some patriotic songs that we associate with the more patriotic national holidays. But even that, you don't hear so often.
Yeah.
You might think some in worship, we don't do as much of that here. But it's really Christmas, this time of year,
yes,
that really holds that attraction of music and very familiar things.
And I'm a strong advocate of not listening to Christmas music too early. You can, but I think one thing that makes it special this time of year is that it has its own season. It is sort of relegated to this time. We do some similar things with Easter hymns as well, but it's not nearly as popularized in culture. To be able to hear those familiar songs, pull back memories, and there's a reason we try to stick to familiar songs. There's plenty of Advent songs out there, and some of which we know and many of which we don't. I actually don't mind singing Christmas songs during Advent. It brings in that, again, that warm feeling, that grounding, that, oh yes, it's time to prepare for this season now.
Yeah. And I've been in some churches where the musicians almost use it to kind of hold hostage. Like, they don't sing any Christmas songs until the actual day. And then you got to squeeze them all in a hurry because there's, you know, this whole time when you're hearing these songs already in Hallmark store or wherever you might be, you're not singing them in church, which feels kind of weird.
It feels odd. And there's, to have the Joy Sunday, this upcoming Sunday, to not sing Joy of the World feels really odd, which is why we will be singing Joy to the World before we launch into the cantata.
Yeah. Well, anything else that you think we should know about the cantata as we listen to it? Like, what is your favorite song in there?
Oh, my favorite is actually the one that's not as familiar. It's the only original song to the cantata, and it is the title of the cantata as well, Carol of Christmas. I'm actually going to read to you the foreword, a small part of the foreword in this cantata. It says that this particular work is somewhat different from John W. Peterson's other musicals in that it is based almost entirely on the carols we all know and love. It is a new and sparkling treatment of words and music. This is the music that captures the warmth and wonder of the season. And as John W. Peterson writes one of his lyrics, this is part of Carol of Christmas. Music is the sound of Christmas. Melody is heard everywhere. Children singing, church bells ringing, songs are in the air. This is the Carol of Christmas. You'll hear that early on in the cantata, but that theme is going to come back over and over throughout the cantata, calling you back. I think that's exactly what we were just talking about. Music is the sound of Christmas. You hear it everywhere. Children are singing. Church bells are ringing. That's the sound. That is what Christmas, a large part of Christmas is about.
That's great. Well, I want to encourage our folks as you come to hear the cantata to listen out for that song in particular, but also to hear how everything is put together, because he does a beautiful job of using both the spoken word and the sung word to talk about the importance of the message that we carry this time of year, that the light is going to come back. The days are getting longer again before long, and we can celebrate not only that, but celebrate the light that God has brought into our lives through Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, I want to invite our listeners to be thinking about that, to think about, and you mentioned before we started
this question of what would this season be like without music?
Yeah, to really sit in that imagery for a minute, think about coming into worship and there's no music, you
imagine
know there's going to be
just a Christmas Eve.
Right. Like, there's going to be no, imagine if there was no singing, there's no prelude, there's no instrumental while we're moving around. It's going to be silence and speaking and cymbals and leaving. Mm. And how that makes you feel. For me, being steeped in music, I'm pretty uncomfortable thinking about an hour of speaking with no singing and no music of any kind, especially at Christmas during worship. And then as you're thinking through what that might feel like, maybe think of your favorite Christmas carol. Hmm. And why is that your favorite? Is it the text? Is it just the tune? Is it a memory that it invokes as we get ready for this Sunday?
It's great. Well, thank you, Rachel, for giving your time. And thank you for the great work that you're doing with music here.
We're looking forward to the cantata in a couple of days. And we'll see all of you on Sunday.
It'll be a lot of fun.